greetings, friends around the world. Well, here we are approaching another holiday season and a time of fantastic shoplifting as never before. Did you know shoplifting is the fastest growing source of crime within the general population today? One of the big problems of our Western world of affluence is too many people have the jitters over the glitters on the shelves of our wonderful Disneyland-like supermarkets and can't control their hands, apparently. Now, there's a lot of evidence around to support anyone who might fear that America is becoming a nation of small crime chiselers. The shops are a little bit different in Great Britain, and maybe some of the crime waves there and the fact that the London bobbies are thinking about defending themselves now with guns for the first time, and the recent case, as a matter of fact, of some of the shooting that occurred over there. One policeman were killed. And you people in Australia, it's no different. People get into jitters because of some of the moral standards of people who live right near us. America is becoming a nation of small-time thieves, crooks, and chiselers, and the fastest growing source of crime within the general population is that of shoplifting. It was up 93% in 5 years, and it's now calculated that several $1 million a day are stolen from stores by the combination of customers and employees. Now, for instance, if you took a look at the cost to you and the cost to the entire economy of shoplifting by itself, the value of the average item taken from supermarkets has risen from $1.11 back in 1961 to $3.06 in 1965. And by current estimates, one out of every 52 supermarket customers is secreting at least one item that is not going to be paid for. You notice in the supermarkets today how they have these big black mirrors around the walls that you look up right near the ceiling and you see this black pane of glass. You know what that is, of course. That's a place for viewing by someone behind that has a one-way mirror, but he can see through it to watch you. And then, of course, there's the use of closed-circuit TV cameras and the use of various reflective mirrors and devices in the long corridors piled high with goodies. And we find that housewives are among the constant offenders in the increased shoplifting today. Somebody is going to pay for it, though, even though maybe the shoplifter doesn't. He will eventually, too, because the 51 honest customers, if you can call them that, maybe they just don't have the opportunity, and I'll come back to that statement later. I'm not calling everybody a crook, but then, as one person said to me in a letter recently, everybody is a potential crook, isn't he? But the 51 honest customers, to whom the cost of America's $2 billion to $3 billion annual shoplifting loss, of course, that's passed along in higher prices. Together, of course, with the cost of security guards, preventive devices, legal prosecution of those who are caught. How many times have you driven down a neighborhood street and seen a shopping cart parked on a sort of an anonymous corner? I wonder how many housewarmers are using these steel shopping carts for laundry baskets. I wonder how many little kids are using them for a sort of a toy cart around the neighborhood. You ever notice that? Well, you know, you're paying those too. Many a person will drive by and see a housewife on her way home with a shopping cart laden with groceries. Then maybe she's 5 or 6 blocks from the supermarket. And of course, the supermarket is going to lose a certain number of those things every month. And they have to up the cost of the goods they sell to avoid taking a terrible loss. Now, business and industry lose uncounted millions to the depredations of employees, from the little clerk who preempts stamps and stationery to the truck driver who knocks off work with a truckload of company products for his own private enterprise. There's the classic case of the aircraft company on the West Coast, which one evening instructed the workers as they left the factory to assemble in the yard. And it's kind of funny, and yet it isn't either. You see, all the management wanted to do was to take a group photograph. But the workers assumed that there was going to be some kind of a search or inspection. And suddenly, all around this huge crowd in the parking lot, the ground was just littered with all kinds of hastily abandoned tools and equipment. Everything from soldering irons to little electric drills. Such petty thefts are growing, and so are big-time dippings into tills. Last year, it was estimated there were $1 billion embezzled out of U.S. business. But what is really frightening is not so much that. That's frightening all by itself, you bet it is. But the attitude of people toward thievery, stealing, and crime. That is the lamentable part of it. I've been talking in a series on the World Tomorrow program about law, about the basic set of laws that go absolutely contrary to human nature. about laws against human nature. Laws that are in 10 major points that cover every last facet of life. Laws were magnified in the continuing bestseller of a certain author who wrote all about human nature. And the one who invented human nature, human beings, put them on the earth and tells all about their problems and their physical desires and their headaches and fears and all of their horrible neuroses and psychoses that lead to their unhappiness and their disappointment in life. This continual bestseller I'm talking about is the Bible. And the one who caused the Bible to be written and guaranteed that it would be preserved and perpetuated and brought down to us today is the one whose existence you can prove if you are willing to take time. He's called God. He's not a metaphysical being. He's not something you experience. He's a person in a specific place. And he has written down a certain law. Now, whether you believe that or not, at least believe this, that the world would be a pretty fabulous place if everybody kept those Ten Commandments. Now, I've come to the eighth commandment. I talked about the seventh one, which has to do with sex, which has to do with restraint, which has to do with morality and faithfulness, chastity, integrity. And we were talking about what a wonderful world it could be if every last home were based upon belief in and absolute obedience to the seventh commandment that says, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." And all of the places in the Bible where that is magnified, the various examples of it. And I gave a lot of the statistics of the heartbreak and the broken homes and the resultant crime, the illegitimacy, the homeless kids, the traumatic experiences of so many millions of unwed mothers today as a direct result of the breaking of that commandment. And then about some of the right dating practices. And I have mentioned those articles. If you didn't hear that series, then write for the articles on it. On how to have a happy marriage, and the one I announced on how to solve family arguments, and also the booklet, which has a great deal to do with that, as well as rearing children, which is on the plain truth about child rearing. But now we've come to the eighth of those 10 commandments, the 10 points of the great law of God, the great moral principle. Well, whether people believe it or not, you've got to admit this, that if everyone, everywhere, were absolutely honest, and if there were no thievery to the ring, it would be a whole lot better world. It just really would. Look at all the people who would be out of a job. Look at the absence of fear on the part of some people who fear armed robbery, rape, muggings, and attack, purse snatching, or being attacked or beset upon in an elevator in a big city crowded apartment. Look at the absence of the law enforcement agencies and officials. Look at the resultant savings and the fantastic tax dollars it takes, or pounds, or escudos, or shillings, or what have you, that have to go to support such law enforcement agencies. Law agencies which have to do with the detection and apprehension of crime, but which rarely are able to come up with a conviction. Look at the fantastic dollars that would be saved just in the economics of it by itself. Well, let's take a look at people's attitude about crime. Let's take a look at the scope of crime, at the never-ending river of crime and violence in the United States, Britain, Australia, South Africa, Northwestern Europe, and for that matter, even in some of the Asian countries, where we have bequeathed the kind of a Western society. Take Japan, where crime is on the rise, and at the same time, Western so-called culture is on the rise, and where all it took was just one American movie of a jackbooted character in a leather jacket on a motorcycle, running around terrorizing small towns in California to practically change the entire social strata of teenage society. And where in Japan today, you've got people running around, teenagers, with leather jackets and big leather belts and big black boots on motorcycles, doing the very same thing because they want to mimic what they saw in a couple of American movies. It is really amazing. Well, petty thefts are really growing, and stealing from one's employer is hardly considered stealing at all, according to most people. A Harvard sociology professor Chad Gordon, says people either justify it by such unconscious mechanisms as, well, the company is coming because they feel they don't get a big enough salary, enough time off, or they don't get certain benefits, or we have the idea, like many people do about their income tax, they owe it to me. That is, you see, because they didn't give him a raise, or because they feel their taxes are too high. Cheaters neutralize their dishonesty by saying, yeah, but everybody does it. And this happens from the time a child first goes to kindergarten, and he's maybe taking waiting class or sand pile, and somebody steals his little dump truck or his Crayolas. from tennis shoes to lunch pails, in the lower grades, on up to bicycles and articles of clothing, on up into preschool, children soon learn that it's probably best, this is their view, to go ahead and steal from somebody else. And the moment they find theirs missing, they take somebody else's. This is done in the service constantly. Anytime there's a baggage inspection or a locker inspection, you know, with MA or the chief or somebody comes around and finds, here's a white hat in the Navy, it is, and it's got maybe three stencils inside of it. You see, you're supposed to stencil your clothing. And the idea is that if you sell an article of clothing, you're to take it to the MA shop. One stencil is supposed to be obliterated, the other put on it. You're supposed to have a little document out that says it's been sold. So it's sort of a vicious cycle. One man steals somebody, the man who's been stolen from steals from somebody else, and the third fellow turns around and steals from somebody else. So pretty soon, theoretically, you get your own hat back. And that's what people were doing. They feel, well, somebody else is stealing from me. Why shouldn't I steal from them? And the public hears about graft and chiseling and cheating in high places, corporation and price-rigging executives. Or they hear about people in government fleeing and absconding with funds. And so, admitting to themselves there is a great deal of graft in high places, they feel not a little bit dishonest in shading their income tax report or padding the old expense account to take it away from the corporation or the government they feel is cheating them. Traditional victims, of course, are any commercial enterprises such as hotels, motels, restaurants, and, of course, the ever-present supermarket. New York's Americana Hotel lost 38,000 Demitasse spoons, 18,000 towels, 355 silver coffee pots. How do you get those out of a hotel? 15,000 finger bowls and, believe it or not, 100 Bibles. All of which have a few words in them about stealing, during the first 10 months of operation. And of course, the big insurance companies are considered the fairest game of all. A crumpled fender can be padded into a complete overhaul for the family car, the proverbial snapping, back-wrenching incident, which ends up to be maybe $7 to $10 billion worth of damage. And of course, that sounds facetious, but maybe it's not. You heard about the crook, didn't you, in jail? Who is suing a certain detective agency and the bank and maybe even a film company, for all I know, for about $7 million because he said his personal liberty was taken away from him and he had his rights violated because somebody took his picture during a bank robbery. He was standing here with a gun pointing at the bank tellers, and they were in terror. And a camera, a hidden camera, which increasingly now they have been installed in some of the banks to detect just such a thing, took his picture, and now he's suing them for taking his picture without his permission because that deprived him of his personal liberty. But at last report, he couldn't raise the $15 registration fee to go ahead with this route. So big insurance companies come in for it constantly, and that's reflected in higher premiums to you. You know, the friendly garage mechanic who said, well, don't worry, I do this for all my customers. So companies only wince, and then they just add a little bit more money on their rates, you see, to have a buffer for the cost of cheating. And it comes to a pretty sizable sum, as a matter of fact, because the Claims Bureau of the American Insurance Association estimates that 75% of all claims are dishonest, at least in some respect, and amount to an overpayment of more than $350 million a year. So you're having it added to your insurance costs. You know, the attitudes toward cheating are amazing among high school students and youths. For example, a recent survey by a New York newspaper about what high school and college students thought about cheating in school found that the majority took the view that truth and honesty, far from being absolutes, are matters that can be interpreted only in terms of a specific situation or a specific time in a specific place. And of course, people believe today it's not what you do, it's who sees you doing it. And it isn't that stealing is so bad, they say, but getting caught is a real sin. You shouldn't get caught. And if you get caught, other people just smile. And chances are a big crowd gathers, the policemen are attacked, and forced to release their criminal who's been apprehended and is sitting patiently in the back seat with his handcuffs on, waiting to be taken to the station house. And this happens practically daily. You hear of it constantly in your newspapers. Overwhelmingly, the kids who participated in this survey talked about the abundant evidence of corruption, trickery, deceit, and opportunism rampant on the international, national, local levels, and even in the home. And therefore used this as justification for their own personal errors. You know the most ancient dodge, the oldest argument in the world? It is, well, sure, I'm guilty, but so is he. It is, well, sure, I do it, but doesn't everybody? It is that one crime plus one crime equals no crime. My sin justifies itself because you sinned. That your sin justifies mine. That we, by sinning together, wash each other clear and pure. This is the most ancient farce, the oldest dodge on the face of this earth. That because one person sinned, somebody else is justified in doing the same thing. And what a shameful sham it really is. So the young people are telling us, because of what we've been feeding them at all levels of their education and because of the society they see around them. Honesty and truth, said one, just don't seem to have a place in anyone's life anymore. This was a junior in college. And he said, most people's code of ethics shifts from day to day. It changes to fit the condition of that particular day's situation. Over an empty shell of reasoning. No. Codes of ethics don't change. People change. Ethics and laws, especially spiritual laws, do not change. They remain absolutely constant. But people are completely unpredictable, and human nature by itself is basically antagonism against law, resentment against authority, rebellion against God's word, against the laws of God in the Bible, and for that former rebellion and resentment against every constituted authority of society. And because human nature by itself is lying, and because society is founded upon lies, and most people are liars and cheats and hypocrites and thieves, and they resent law, controls, and discipline. You can kid yourself this isn't true, but it is. And most people are lustful. They say, well, you see, I'm just a human being. What that means is, it's all right for me to act in any fashion that seems to appeal to me at the moment, to give vent to my passions, to fall into an absolute rage, or to give vent to my corruption, trickery, deceit, and hypocrisy, because everybody else does it. No, people change. Ethics don't change. A senior said to this New York City newspaper, in its survey about the feelings of college students and kids about cheating and about how to get ahead. A senior said, nothing is black or white anymore. Everything's a kind of dull gray. It's hard to say what's right or wrong. Now, it's not really hard to say, but people just don't want to say because they feel later on they'll want to do something against what they just said, and they don't want to get trapped by their own self-avowed moral code. A freshman said, the definition of truth has always been puzzling to me. It's simple to define it as the opposite of a lie. It's very nice to go look for it, but I wouldn't know how to go about it. He did what he said. Neither do you. A lot of people think that all these monstrosities they use in psychology class are getting them somewhere, but they really don't understand the word that is said. How many people are there sitting around in psychiatry and psychology classes today hearing the mutterings and rambling going on and on and on about relevant values and about relating to one another with this and that? Truth, honesty, loyalty, integrity, they discuss it. About the passing ethics of shivering masses of humanity and just go away in the loftiness of their own conceit, thinking they understood it all. But you know, anything is known by its fruits. What are the fruits of the modern psychology? What are the fruits of that kind of thinking? What kind of lives? How much happiness is resulting from it? What are the benefits? What kind of lives are people living? A graduate talking about equity, honesty, loyalty, said, and he was working in just such a class, trying to get a master's degree in psychology. He said, well, those are nice words, but they're difficult things to come by nowadays. No, they're not. They're just an instant away. The moment you begin to believe in them and practice them, they're not difficult to come by so far as you're concerned, but they are pretty difficult to find in people in general. A junior argued that cheating is not dishonest, but necessary. In other words, dishonesty isn't dishonest. Is not? What kind of a definition is that? And his argument was, well, if you have to pass, you have to pass. Actually, it's not copying, it's checking. Is that right? So we call it by a different name. We dress up crime in a tuxedo and go to a party. Many people would sit down aghast over the dinner table with a known or confessed bank robber, hoodlum, thug, or murderer, but they think nothing whatsoever of sitting down to that same dinner table with the fellow who gives them the latest inside method on cheating on his income tax, or about how to pass bridge signals, or about how to pad the old expense account. People endorse cheating as long as it's in dressed-up language. One Brooklyn sophomore said, if you're sure you can get away with it, it's all right. He admitted this is a dog-eat-dog world, and he said you might as well take advantage of people or they're going to take advantage of you. And he said cheating goes on all over. People cheat on their taxes. You see the old dodge? Everybody does it. Why shouldn't I? This is what people believe. Everybody does it. I'd definitely do the same, he said. Otherwise, I'd be at a disadvantage. It's being done, and I conform to it. He said it's a part of our society. Yes, it certainly is that, all right. As a matter of fact, it's such a part you can hardly believe some of the crime statistics about what's happening. The crime clock for last year, the summary given by the FBI showed that there was a robbery. This is in the United States. You people in Britain have a different crime clock, but it's ticking along pretty rapidly, too. And there's enough murder and muggings and rape, thievery and robbery in Great Britain to stand your hair on end. In some cases, that's a lot of hair. There's a robbery in the United States every 4.5 minutes, a burglary every 27 seconds, a larceny. That's a crime that involves the stealing or theft of 50 dollars or over every 41 seconds. And an automobile theft, one every single minute. And the amazing thing is that larger and larger percentages of these crimes are being committed by the majority of society, those under 26 years of age, and the bulk of some of the real major crime categories, and this includes murder, it includes rape, it includes larceny and auto theft, more than 50% being committed by those 21 years of age and younger, by teenagers and those who have not really even become mature and of voting age yet. There were 118,900 robberies in that year. 1,173,000 burglaries, 2,500,000 larcenies, and 486,600 automobile thefts. And the value of property represented by those crimes reached $1 billion. That's in felonies or thefts alone. And arrests of persons under 18 for serious crimes increased 47% in the past 5 years. While the increase in that age group, for those of you who like to say, oh, well, it's just keeping pace with population, the increase for the population of that age group was 17%. In 1965, there were 53 police officers murdered in the line of duty, and 1 out of 10 of the men wearing uniform in our cities were attacked at one time or another by people giving vent to their rage against a symbol of authority. 52 of those 53 were killed by firearms. And since 1960, 96% of the officers murdered in the course of fulfillment of their duties have been killed with firearms. It's about time we took a look at the crime picture of the United States and realized it is, as J. Edgar Hoover said, one of the great twin enemies of our modern era that threatens the very continuation of our society. It means that our society is now threatened with an increasingly large specter of destruction from within our own ranks, the attitude of people toward law. You know, dishonest employees within many of the corporations, supermarkets, hotels, what have you, account for about 2/3 of all this stealing, twice as much as the shoplifters. That was a report from the Small Business Administration. Among tips in a news bulletin on preventing theft were: provide employees uniforms without pockets. Can you imagine that? Ban employees from parking near a back door. Keep an eye on your new employees because petty thefts are growing. And not only that, but the amount of people who have to be engaged in trying to detect petty theft is overwhelming. In Southern California alone, there are 250,000 people. That's 250,000 of the total population engaged in security work. These are people who do nothing but watch other people. This is what we're paid for. Just imagine that. Here's a magazine called Security World, published for security workers. And because now the biggest business in the United States is crime, and stealing is one of the nation's major businesses, if you can call it that, because it goes up into multiple billions of dollars. Many businesses are literally stolen out of business and have to declare bankruptcy. 7% of business failures today are directly attributable to crime in business. And the man who was the publisher of that magazine, Security World, believes people generally are more dishonest than they used to be. There's a generation of morals going on, he said, and erosion. There's evidence that crime is growing more rapidly than the population's evidence. I hope to tell you there's evidence. Let me tell you again what we just said. That in that age group, 18 years of age and under, who accounted for a 47% increase in crime. In the past 5 years, the increase in that age group was only 17%. I'll say there's evidence. Now, you heard of this bizarre, macabre, horrifying crime over Mesa, wasn't it, Arizona? The other day, did you hear the report of how this kid was a beast and he was liked and this and that? Of course, he was always alone. He didn't date and he was uncoordinated and frustrated in sports and all the rest of it. But he's been planning that crime for at least 3 months, ever since he read about the nurses in Chicago. He had no remorse. He was actually laughing when the policeman carried him out of the area. He shot these women in the back of the head and one child and was trying to kill them. Herded them into a rear room of the beauty salon, ordered them to lie face down on the floor, and went methodically about the business of killing them. You hear these brutal mass killings done by teenagers. This was a high school student. He killed a mother and a three-year-old daughter. Methodically shooting them, showed absolutely no remorse, said if his own mother and sister had walked in, he would have killed them too, and the only reason he could do for doing it was he wanted a lot of people all over the world to hear about him. He wanted to be known. I'm sure sorry I know who that kid is, Ray. I'm sorry he's known. But that is the macabre and bizarre method of thinking of some people in this world today. Now, if you want to kid yourself, this is a real glamorous society, and you just want to wrap your arms around it and cuddle up to it and love it, you just help yourself. If you think I'm saying that every last human being is a criminal, you're wrong. I'm not. I'm just saying every last human being is a human being, and human beings are filled with human nature, and human nature is criminal. Now, think about that a while. It means that every last human being is a potential criminal, and everybody's got his justification point. He says he would do such and such if he needed to under certain conditions. It's about time you looked inside your own heart and mind and asked yourself, would you steal under any conditions at any time? Are you a shoplifter? A crook, a burglar, a thief? If you are, you're a dirty clod. Now, if you're not, of course, then I'm not talking to you, but if the shoe fits, wear it. It's about time you took a good long look at yourself, at the nation, at the world, and asked yourself, what's happening to us? Is there any such thing as honesty at all? Write for this booklet on the Ten Commandments and find how there is a law that is directly contrary to human nature. A law that, if it is obeyed, and you can have the power and strength to obey it, will change human nature by an outside source of strength many people know nothing of. The book of the Ten Commandments is absolutely free of charge. There is no price for it. These other articles I've mentioned, for those of you who are reading or going together or families, on how to have a happy marriage, and the one on how to solve family arguments, and the book on the plain truth about child rearing. They're free of charge, no price, and the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, if you'll write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye.